Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of You Have Tried Me Radio. Today is Monday, the 7th, 2011, and you are listening to Militia Monday. Tonight we have with us Dave, as always, my co-host, and tonight we also have, a guy that one of those really sharp guys out there, one of the people I think really is a true thinker, not a rhetoric spouter, doesn't chant slogans, but he actually thinks everything through. And his name is Gary Yance. You can find him at Well-Regulated American Militia. He does some of the most interesting posts that I read there. And tonight he's going to be coming on with us, and we are going to be talking about taboo subjects tonight. We're going to talk about those things that we just can't seem to talk about anywhere. Cops, military, religion, whatever it is. So the conversation is kind of going to go wherever it leads us. I would honestly say if you're easily offended by anything, this is not the show you want to listen to. This is not going to be it. If you're into the whole Plato's cave, the illusion of what reality is and what you're taught to believe, and certain organizations and institutions within the U.S., or certain belief structures or dogmatic belief, you might want to jump out of here. I mean, if you're easily offended, this show is never for you. One of the first things I wanted to start off with, though, was the idea of survival. And, I saw a post in the room a couple of days ago, and actually over the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about survival, and we're kind of taking the Survival Sunday show away from the entire bug-out bag, off-gridding thing. We've discussed that. We've talked about it. But there's a problem with that. If we're planning on just bugging out and giving up everything that we have, what purpose does it serve? So, I saw a really good definition in the chat room the other day. It said survival. Assurance that the future is as it should be for your children and grandchildren. It is survival of the family, not each of us individually. And then committees can look out for all the members of their committee and their families, and the militia can be used to defend them. There's a lot of things we can do to survive, and I think we have to remember that survival is about collective survival, about our society surviving, about our way of life surviving. Not about the family or the individual's survival. If you're militia, I believe that's the mentality we need to start taking and looking at. Survivalists, those guys who bug out to the mountains and are waiting the apocalypse, that's what they do. They bug out. Militia don't bug out. We stand and fight. We defend our freedom, and we don't. And I've always wondered about that. And every time I see people talking about bugging out, I wonder, why would you give up what you have to go back to square zero, start off from a position of extreme, a completely untenable position to try and regain what you just gave up? It doesn't make a lot of tactical sense to me. So something to think about there. Also, I wanted to start off the conversation with the Supreme Court case of John Bad Elk. This is going to be one of those taboo subjects we're talking about tonight. Now, I don't know if many of you know about it, but John Bad Elk, back in the late 1800s, a cop came out to arrest Bad Elk. And it was an unlawful arrest. There was no grand jury indictment. There was no arrest warrant. Cop came out to arrest John. John said no. I'll go in and talk to you guys tomorrow or the next day or whatever it was. The cop decides that that's not good enough because he told John he was coming with him, and that's all there is. He's got the badge. You will obey. You will listen to me. So the cop goes to grab his gun. John Bad Elk shoots him, kills him. John Bad Elk is arrested, of course, goes through court, takes it all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said it was an unlawful arrest. John Bad Elk had every right and every freedom to shoot that cop. I bring this up not to encourage people to go out there and start popping cops or anything like that, but to bring to light the fact that we have freedoms. And I don't care what badge you hold or what office you hold or what title you hold. When you come for those freedoms, you are nothing more than some criminal coming to take what's mine. I don't care what badge you have. I don't care what rank you hold in the military. I don't care how long you've served and how many decorations you have. I don't care if you're the President of the United States of America. I don't care if you're the Speaker of the House. You know, so you see that a lot up here in Canada as well. You know, it's even worse up here. Up here, man, I see people in America getting really close to what Canadians are like. And you know, I'm actually getting kind of worried about it, because in Canada, you can't defend yourself against the police. You have no right to say no. And the people believe this, according, you know, apparently. That's not what the law says, but that's what they believe. You know, the cops are always presented as the good guys, even though they all wear black. I thought when I was growing up, the good guys wore white. And I think these are things that we need to start really thinking about and looking at. Now, I'm not encouraging anybody to stand up and start, you know, doing something that is going to make you a martyr. But I think if we all start thinking about this and acting accordingly, we won't become martyrs and we won't stand alone. We won't be that guy in the Tiananmen Square. Dave, Gary, not going to hog it all. What are your guys' thoughts on this? Let's start with you, Gary. What do you think about John Badock and what we just talked about?
Well, I've only read a very, very little bit about the case, but I've been aware of the Supreme Court ruling for a long time that a citizen has the right to defend themselves against unlawful arrest through the use of any means he deems necessary, even the use of deadly force against the offending officer. That's a very serious thing to even begin to contemplate, especially in our society where we're more or less, like you said, in Canada. I mean, we're kind of sort of brainwashed to just blindly kneel to authority, and that's not the way things were ever meant to be in this country. That's not to say I'm advocating, like you said, I'm not advocating any violence or anything against cops. There's a lot of great cops out there. I have cops that are personal friends, but it should be a vehicle to make them think, if they're even aware of that ruling, about what they do and the seriousness of their oath to the Constitution, because there's a growing faction of people out there, and I'd like to think that it was most of America, that realizes that things are spinning out of control here, and, you know, we got to do something to rein in the powers that be. And the first pawns that they use are law enforcement officers. So if they're blindly following, you know, the whims of their leaders without taking consideration for the consequences of their actions, then in a sense, shame on them, you know. They should really be thinking about their constitutional oath and what they're done and what the laws of America is, sticking to those guidelines, irregardless of what they said. I mean, and in no way am I comparing them to the Nazis, but that was the defense of many of the Nazis in Nuremberg, the lessers. They were like, well, we're just doing what we were told. It didn't work for them. They all hung right with the guys that told them to do what they did. So at what point in our history do we realize that we're doing bad wrong against the people, and that we're abrogating the very laws that were sworn to uphold, I guess. And, you know, it's a very serious subject, and like you said, it's kind of taboo, and we don't talk about that, but it's something we need to consider, I think.
Well, I agree. I mean, you know, we see so much police brutality going on out there. For instance, there was a situation that they thought was going to turn into another Rodney King incident in California. I believe it was in San Diego, where in a subway or a tram system or something, they had there was a black individual, they black youth. They had him on the ground. Three cops, two at each one of his hands. The individual is handcuffed, face down on the ground. Cop goes, pulls out his gun, shoots him in the back of the head, in his back and in the back of the head twice, while he's face down and handcuffed. He said that he was resisting and he went to tase him. Now, I've been handcuffed and I've been face down on the ground. Trust me, you're not resisting with three big burly cops standing over you.
Right.
Yeah, you know, that's for sure.
You're taser and your pistol, then you need not be a cop.
It's absolutely ridiculous how far they're taking all of this, and you know, people are just standing down. It's really time for the citizens to grow a backbone and start standing up to this kind of crap. You know, I don't advocate just going around and randomly popping cops, but if you see something like that, I would applaud you for stepping in and doing something about it. I would applaud you for standing up when they come for you illegally to do their bidding to you. You know, we got our work cut out for us. So they're not going to respond well to it at first, but when it becomes prevalent in society where people are standing up forcefully for themselves and their fellow citizens, this crap will start to subside a little bit because they go, wait a minute, you know, if we cross the line here, they're going to come get us, you know, or, you know, we'll meet immediate resistance. They'll shoot at us, you know. The reason they are able to run amok like they do is nobody stands up to them. Nobody tries to stop it. Nobody tries to intervene. We just let it go. And it's not only our right, it's our duty to, you know, defend each other, to take care of this kind of crap. Because if we stand down, they're just going to keep escalating this until it's completely intolerable. I mean, it's getting there quite fast now. And we've got to do something about it.
Well, all the powers that be, whether it's politicians, military, or cops, were always meant to be subservient to and accountable to we the people. And you know, whatever happened to the idea that we were servants, you know, we're public servants. And I think that's where we've made our grave mistake as a populace. We have failed to toe the line to hold these people accountable for their actions. So thus there is no accountability or very little accountability. Sure, you get a couple of people screaming and yelling and crying and whining about wrong and injustice, but the masses of the people, for the most part, either don't want to be bothered by it, don't know, don't understand, or, you know, are just complacent in their daily lives, and like I said, don't want to be bothered by it. The thing about that shooting was, it was on the Bay Area Rapid Transit System in San Francisco, and it was actually Oakland cops, and there was a person on a train with like a cell phone recorded the whole thing, and I've seen the video, and it's amazing. I mean, it's appalling. It's out there on YouTube. I can't remember when I seen it a while ago, and the people were all aghast in the train, and one guy was yelling out the window, "Hey, that's wrong, you know, it's what you're doing is wrong," and basically they witnessed the murder. And it all came down when it was said and done. The cops went to trial, and you know, nothing really big came of it. It wasn't like a murder trial; it was a wrongful death trial. I mean, you watch the video, and you know, there's no doubt in my mind that it was. I can't say there's no doubt in my mind it was criminal intent, but it's pretty clear that the cop acted as if, you know, nobody was ever going to see what he did. And unfortunately, he was caught on video. So it's up to us to keep them honest. And if we don't do our job in keeping them honest, then we can only expect dishonesty.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Our video cameras are a very valuable asset in that. They'll fear those as much or more than our guns.
Do you guys mind if I read something for a minute?
Sure.
Go for it.
This is I read this last night, and I'll probably read it again in the future. I think it is so telling. This is from Alexander Solzhenitsyn's book, The Gulag Archipelago.
Uh-huh.
This was taken from this was written by a man who was a victim of this. Now, he was in the Russian military when, you know, the whole revolution took place. He was a highly decorated individual in the military. He had done nothing wrong. The only thing that he had done wrong is that he had correspondence with somebody who later turned out to be an insurgent, if you will, or, you know, an enemy of the state. But then in Russia during that time, everybody was an enemy of the state. This is what he wrote. Oops. This is what he wrote. This is from the Gulag Archipelago, page 13. It's one of the footnotes, footnote number 5. And how we burned in the cabs later, thinking, what would things have been like if every security operative, when they went out at night to make an arrest, had been uncertain whether they would return alive and had to say goodbye to his family? Or if during periods of mass arrest, for example, in Leningrad, when they arrested a quarter of the entire city, people had not simply sat there in their lairs, paling with terror at every bang of the downstairs door and at every step on the staircase. But they understood they had nothing left to lose and had boldly set up in the downstairs hall an ambush of half a dozen people with axes, hammers, pokers, or whatever else was at hand. After all, you knew ahead of time that those blue caps were out at night for no good purpose. And you could be sure ahead of time that you'd be cracking the skull of a cutthroat. Or what about the Black Maria sitting out there on the street with one lonely chauffeur? What if it had been driven off or its tires spiked? The organs would quickly have suffered a shortage of officers and transport, and notwithstanding all of Stalin's thirst, the cursed machine would have ground to a halt. Now, we got to remember, this is at a time, man, when the Bolshevik Revolution has happened. They're no longer trying to present the facade of being for the workers. They are now letting their true face show. They are turning their sights on the internal enemy, which is every single individual, including individuals within the machine itself. Alexander Solzhenitsyn was part of that machine. He was a highly decorated officer. And he said that when they started coming for people, everybody said, well, if I do anything, it'll just make it worse. And in the end, the numbers are unknown. I've heard estimates of anywhere from 60,000 to well over 100, or 60 million to well over 100 million people dead.
Right.
Killed by their own government. So my question is,
well, then,
when do you say no? When do you say I've had enough? And what are you going to be willing to do when it becomes too much? And the next question we really got to ask ourselves is, Gary brought up in the chat room, are cops even constitutional? I say they're not. Gary says they're not. Maybe we should start looking at these questions.
Well, that's an interesting point. I'm no lawyer, and I give no legal advice, of course. but I have studied enough. I mean, I became in the 90s curious of what was going on around me, and I didn't really fully understand, so I began to study law a little bit, not extensively, but with the Black's Law Dictionary and some other things, and I found that there's two different languages out there. There's a language that lawyers speak, and there's a language that we speak, and sometimes same words that are familiar have totally different meanings. And one of those terms is under the color of law, and doing something under the color of law is not a lawful exercise. Anything under the color of law is like a fiat thing. It looks like and has the appearance of being a lawful thing, but it's not. And, in the United States Code, both Title 18 and Title 42, it talks about persons who, in uniform, go up on the highways and the byways of the land and deprive a citizen of their lawful rights under the color of law, are guilty of a felony. So there's a lot that is colorable to the legal definition in our laws of what's happening today, and as they've not been called on this, they tend to take and run with it. I mean, absolute power corrupts absolutely, and once you have, if you have a thirst for power, and I'm not saying all cops do. There's, like I said, I have friends that are police officers, and they're really good people, but absolute power corrupts absolutely, and power can be a drug to some people. And, if they start to get off on it a little bit, who's to stop them? Who's to rein them in? If not us, certainly nobody else.
Yeah, exactly. You got that right. I'm glad you brought up the whole color of law thing, because that is an epidemic in society today. The whole TSA thing that they've been thrusting upon us is just that. It's color of law. There's no lawful backing behind any of the things that they're doing. they just make it look like there is, and people just kind of blindly go along with it.
Well, they don't understand. And that was one of the things that made me start to study. I was ignorant, and you know, an ignorant people can't be free. I mean, it says that in the Bible. It says that our Founding Father says that, you know, and it's true. You can't, in your ignorance, claim your freedom, because how do you know what your freedom is? I mean, how do you know if you're ignorant of your freedom? Well, it's a catch-22 thing there, but I understand, you know, where they were coming from. You have to know what your rights are. You have to assert your rights. You have to use your rights. If it's something that you put up in a cupboard and just pull out when it's convenient to you, you know, you're going to lose it. And that's what's happening to us today in this country. We're losing our rights because we don't understand them, we don't know them, and we don't use them. We only claim them when they've been broken, or when they've been neglected, or when they've been denied. And at that point in time, it's a little bit too late, for the most part.
Well, you know, you're right there. You know, there's no such thing as your rights being taken from you.
Correct.
There's no such thing as a victim to tyranny. There's no such thing as an unwilling slave. You know, if you're a slave, it's because you chose to allow yourself to be enslaved. You let yourself be victim. You became a volunteer. You volunteered for it. If your freedoms are taken from you and you do not fight tooth and nail to keep them, you have volunteered to give them up.
Correct. I agree.
You know, there's no such thing as victims. There's volunteers. You know, and I hate that word victim, man, because it creates this whole defenselessness about us. You know, I think we need to stop thinking about, you know, being victims of, you know, victims of our government, and, you know, start becoming, you know, those free men that formed this country long ago. They were not victims by any means whatsoever.
Well, becoming a victim takes away the obligatory portion of what is expected of us under the law. If we're just a victim, then somehow I suppose we're trying to console ourselves in that, well, it wasn't really my fault. And I'm a firm supporter that everything that's happening bad in America today is our fault. It's not the politician's fault. It's not the police's fault. It's the people's fault, because we have let go of the reins of government and bought into this mass fraud somehow that they're in charge and we're not. And that's absolutely wrong, you know, absolutely wrong. But we seem to somewhere have failed to realize that. I mean, I realize there's people out there that do understand that the base of power in America lies not in a military, not in a police force, not in the halls of government, but it lies in we the people. How can 454 people tell 300 million what to do, you know, if they don't want to do it? Where does their power and authority come from? You know, from some divine location? No, it comes from us. And when we refuse to step up to the plate, when we refuse to hold them accountable, when we refuse to do our obligated job by and under the Constitution to keep them honest, then I guess we get what we deserve. And that's where we're at today.
Well, you know, what are your thoughts there, Dave? What do you think?
Oh, no, he's hitting the nail spot on. You know, that's exactly what's going on. And we really need to grow a backbone, start stepping up, manning up, and doing something about it. You know, it's up to us. There's not going to be anybody that's going to come in and just, oh, no. Okay, you know, enough's enough. You know, we're going to stop this now. It's never happened before in history. You know, we have to make them understand that we're not going to tolerate this. We're not going to put up with it. You know, we have to have resolve behind us, you know, to stand up against these thugs. I mean, that's what it's turned into. They're thugs. And it's an unfortunate, you know, state of affairs, but we've let this happen. You know, this is all on us. We would have been for ourselves all along. This never comes far.
Well, you know, let's really ask ourselves a question. for all of our bitching and moaning over the last 60 years about our freedoms being taken away, why haven't we taken them back? What has kept us from doing that? What are your guys' opinion there? What has literally kept us from doing that?
Division.
Okay.
Division, I think, is a...
I agree.
I've read, and it's been years since I have, but I've read the Communist Manifesto. I've read other writings of Marx and Engels and Lenin and Mao, and one of their big things is you know, they're master prestidigitators, so to speak. Watch, I'll distract you with this hand while you're not paying attention to what's really happening in my other hand. You know, let's keep people fighting over race, over religion, over abortion, over, you know, a myriad of things. There are so many things out there that we'll take up our cross for and fight about, and that's as far as we get up the hill. When we reach that point, we're going sideways from there on. And we're out of the fight, and that has happened across America in so many ways, in so many sectors of our society. You know, we dig in, and that's as far as we get. We dig our foxhole there, and this is the battle I'm taking up, and that's what I'm fighting in. And we're 1,000 miles from the real battle. We're out there on some outland post doing a little skirmish with two or three other people that in the big scheme of things is meaningless.
Yeah, very true. The division is rampant. People are in the habit of fighting with each other rather than collaborating together on the things that they have in common. And I see that even in the patriot community. You know, you get a group of people together for a common purpose, and they spend more time arguing about little details of this or that, you know, than anything else. We're in this, you know, trained habit of, you know, oh, if you don't agree with everything I've got to say, then I can't work with you. And we've really got to get over that and start, you know, having unity in purpose. You know, even though we don't agree on everything, you know, but we agree that we want the rights to disagree with each other. You know, we don't want to have to be told what to do, what to think, you know, how to live. You know, it's going to get ridiculous, you know, if we don't get over this and start working together. The education system's a big part of it too. I mean, we've been dumbed down. Our history has been robbed from us. You know, there's a lot of factors in there. But this has been engineered deliberately for us. You know, they knew that if they would divide and conquer us and dumb us down, you know, that we'd be a lot more pliable and would go along with all this crap that they're pulling. And that's exactly what's happened. They knew what they were doing. You know, and they write about it. They brag about it.
Yes.
Well, you know what?
Exactly how they're going to do it.
I say it goes deeper than that. I'd say it's a little bit more... A little bit more than just division amongst us. Here's my two reasons why we haven't taken this country back. The militarized police force and the military.
Here.
That's it. Those two organizations right there keep us from restoring our freedom, making politicians behave, getting rid of judges who commit tyranny upon the people, who legislate from the bench. This gets rid of those, you know, the people who take your land because you didn't pay your lease on it, that illegal property tax.
Right.
It keeps you enslaved to the system so you can never own anything. The ones that come and take your gold. You know, everybody keeps hoarding gold, and people keep talking about buying gold and silver right now. I guess they don't realize that the War Powers Act that allowed them to take our gold in the first place are still in effect. They can come for your gold anytime they want. They can come for your silver anytime they want. They didn't get rid of those laws. They're still there, and they're still in effect.
That's why I invest in brass, lead, and copper.
Brass, lead, and copper are good metals to own, I think, in my personal...
You're here.
You know, I think, though, you know, we keep talking about this division and you know, our division amongst us that keeps us from taking back our country. I that's a part of it. I think that division, though, comes from the fact that the reason we haven't taken back our country is because we have fear over the police and the military. That's it. That is it. When we break it down, I truly think that is only two things keeping us from taking back our freedom.
Well, and ironically enough, those are the very people who are sworn to uphold and defend our Constitution, our Republic, against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. So that's kind of an odd irony there. But you're right. I think there's massive amounts of fear. Even amongst the community and the chat rooms and the things you see, one of the big topics is, will we have to stand against our military? Will our military stand against us? What will happen on the day that they demand confiscation of firearms? Which, at the rate things are going, it seems inevitable because, day by day, bit by bit, they're chiseling away at this the foundation of our freedom, and you can only chisel away at the foundation for so long before the building that rests on it collapses.
Well, that kind of brings us up to, you talked about it's kind of, that last statement you made kind of brings us to a point that, we've talked about many times on this show, the three boxes.
Right. Ballot box, jury box, cartridge box.
That's it. The fourth box, that their first box, the soap box, well, that was dead a long time ago. We know that.
Right.
So the soap box is gone. We never really had that to begin with. The jury box, the ballot box, and the cartridge box. I had probably one of the two best interviews I've ever done in all the years I've been doing radio or talking to people was with a guy named Joseph P. Martino, a retired colonel who did a lot of research and study and wrote papers on insurgency and counterinsurgency. And he said, the jury box is broken, the ballot box is broken. He goes, but it's not quite time to shoot the bastards yet, based upon the just war doctrine, which he's a professor of. He goes, so in the meantime, you're kind of stuck in that gray, we're kind of stuck in that gray zone between, nothing working and being too soon to shoot the bastards. And I think that's where we sit now. And generally speaking, when you reach that plateau in a business environment, what you start doing then is you start analyzing the situation, finding out what the problems are, and you start making plans to get rid of those problems, plans to counter those problems. We don't really seem to be in any kind of a planning phase or anything. We don't really have a plan, I don't think. I hear people say the plan is to restore the Constitution. Okay, how?
Right.
That we get stuck there.
I think a lot of people are of the mindset that one day there'll be some sort of a great battle or a revolution, and okay, we win, so what's next? Well, we've not looked beyond, for the most part. I mean, I know people out there that are looking beyond. I know there are people out there that are making plans, but as a whole, our entire militia community has focused upon trying to eliminate the problem. Maybe even that's better said, trying to eliminate the problem rather than trying to solve the problem. Because if we eliminate the problem, that's fine, but it's going to create a huge vacuum. And nature abhors a vacuum. A vacuum won't last for long. So what's going to happen then? And that's an interesting question. Without a plan, that vacuum is going to be filled by, who knows, some Stalinist, Hitlerist, egotistical military maniac or what? I mean, it's, okay, let's say that all our hopes and dreams come true and we march on Washington. Let's say it's finished without even firing a shot, and we depose all of the tyrants and the despots that have taken control of our government. They're gone. We drive them from our shores peacefully. What next? What are we going to do? This country is so huge. The infrastructure is so great that even hours without some kind of administration would cause such a chaotic collapse. It's hard to even think about. I mean, we have a huge house of cards built here, and it could all come falling down without a plan, pretty easily.
Well, you know what's funny? We keep saying it, like Joe said, it's not time to shoot the bastards yet. Okay, so. But, I had asked him, when is it time to start thinking about how to resist tyranny? And I asked him this over those two shows, and I went back and I listened to those two shows three times in a row, back to back to back. And each time I found something new that I was picking up, I realized something else. And a lot of everything, and in fact, I can't find anything that we had talked about that did not correlate perfectly with what Gary Hunt and I are presenting in this plan. We keep talking about this plan for the restoration of the Republic. So, you know, but he said that the first part, he goes, when you really look at it, he goes, you need to start thinking about how to resist tyranny when they come, trying to take away your tools that allow you to resist tyranny. In other words, your guns.
Right.
Now, that happened in 1968.
With the Gun Control Act.
So, that happened in 1968. What was that, 30 years ago? 40 years ago now. What's our plan? We had 40 years to be thinking about this. What's our plan?
Well, we spun our wheels, making money, living in prosperity, thinking about our wants and our needs and what we were doing, and the world was passing us by while we were complacent with, for the most part, with living our lives. And that's what happened to me. And I woke up one day in the 90s and I thought, what the hell happened? You know, it was so gradual and so seemingly complete. You know, I woke up one day and realized I'm not living in the same world that I was born and raised in, you know? And, I guess that's when I started, for lack of a better term, plan. Well, I planned more for survival than I did for change. But yeah, they've had, I mean, that's an interesting little quip about the Gun Control Act of 1968 was taken nearly word for word verbatim from the Nazi Gun Control Act of 1938. If you read the two, if you get the one interpreted from German to English, I mean, they just cut and paste it.
It's word for word.
Parts of that. It's amazing.
So, you know, why would we, you know, you have to think about that. You know, weren't the Nazis the bad guys? Wasn't Hitler the bad guy?
Yeah.
So why would we take something that was Hitler's and tell Americans it's good for us? Hitler was the bad guy. Everything he did was bad, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, but he was a social fascist. So, and I think that was the beginning, the mid-late 60s was the beginning of the rise to power of the social fascists in America. And they really had their foot in the door. They had been working on it for a long time, for decades. You know, Marxist, communist, socialist, fascist, so you call them whatever you want, secular humanists.
It's all the same.
One goal.
Those isms are all the same.
Right. But that'll get us, we're kind of heading down a rabbit trail there. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have probably...
No, jump down that rabbit trail, man. Like I said, you know, I want to talk about those things we can't talk about. And, you know, and a lot of times the problem is that we listen to too many people that preach doom and gloom. And we know who they are. You know, they preach doom and gloom, and then they sell you their solutions at the end of the show. You know, all throughout the show, they're pumping their solution, their cure for it. And all it's going to cost you is $19.95, $29.95. So, you know, the problem is that most of the time, you know, they give you a little bit of info, and then they fill, you know, then they surround it with a bunch of crap as well. So, you know, but I think we need to realize where this stuff comes from as well. You know, I mean, go read Das Kapital by Karl Marx.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, go read the writings of Cecil Rhodes. You know, it's not just the socialist out there. Go read the writings of Cecil Rhodes. You know, he was the founder of what the hell is a diamond company, man? De Beers. He damn near owned Africa. You know, these are not schmucks that are writing this stuff down. Go read the writings of Lord Milner, George Bernard Shaw.
Yeah.
You know, go read the writings of Bertrand Russell, or go, you know what, you want recent stuff? Go read Brzezinski and Kissinger. They write their books. They tell you everything. They're not afraid to say it, but we don't read. We watch YouTube.
Right. We want to be entertained. We don't want to be bothered with the problem. We want to be entertained. And that's a big thing. I turned off the TV 6 years ago. 6 years ago and a month now. And I don't miss it. And I still allow myself to be entertained. I got a good home theater and I watch a movie. But for the most part, I spend my time on the internet trying to educate myself, and that's an endless process. I mean, and there's so much misinformation out there, it's incredible too. So you really got to learn to pick and choose and read between the lines and search many sources, and if you seek the truth, diligently enough, you'll come upon it, I believe.
You know what? Here's my advice to people that really want to find truth. First off, truth hunts in no, you know, those who seek the truth hunt in no packs. You know, you find truth on your own.
Right. You can't let somebody lead you to it.
The second thing about truth is that you're not going to find truth from reading about something from some guy who read something and then is telling you what it means or what it says. Go read it yourself.
Right.
The third fact about truth, man, is that truth is very deep, and it's usually written in a way that nobody will read it. All those, you know, those damn academic novels that nobody ever wants to read, you know, the writings of Julian Huxley, they're just so dry and academic. Who the hell wants to read them? We should have been reading them 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, we were reading them 100 years ago, and that's how we were able to keep them at bay for so long. And then, starting around the 60s, we just kind of stopped reading. We just kind of stopped reading anything, and then we let them take our guns, we stopped reading, and now look at us today.
We're ignorant, and an ignorant people can't be free. That's when I decided to start educating myself.
You know, somebody in there said, hey, Randy, speak for yourself. You know, when I speak about we, I speak in the general we the people. And unfortunately, if you're not one of the vast 320, you know, I don't know, we got what, 5, 6, 7, 8 million people that are truly aware and awake and are actually thinking about stuff, and maybe 10% of them are really thinkers, if that. When I say the word we, I mean the general masses of America, of the world. So if you don't fit in there, then the we doesn't apply to you. So don't take offense.
Right.
And if it does apply to you, then you take offense, maybe you should think about what we're saying. It's offending you for a reason.
That's a good point. I mean, you know, it's, I don't know, that may well be the crux of our problem. You know, ignorance and complacency and people, I mean, let's face it, some people don't want to know. Some people are afraid to know. Some people know, but they don't want to admit it. You know, it's like different stages of vision. I see the problem, but I want to ignore it. Some people want to bury their head in the sand. And like you said, out of what, maybe out of 300 million, we have maybe 7 million, and maybe a small portion of those that you know, no one understand what's going on and are part of the solution and not part of the problem. I mean, if we look at the 3% that fought in the Revolutionary War against England, 3% of America's population would be, you know, some 9 million people. That's not a very big number in the big scheme of things, but it is far more people than all of the military, police, and powers that be combined in this country. Far more. I mean, how many military do we have? If you combine all the forces of the military and the police, I read something some years ago, and it was only a number like 4 million or something like that. It wasn't that big a number. So we more than double that amount of people. You could change our world with that many dedicated people, our little sphere of the world, the United States, North America, whichever, with a dedicated sphere of that kind of people who knew the truth, understood the truth, had not necessarily gotten rid of, but have overcome their fear and had a plan. You could change the world. But we don't.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's funny because we always say we're battling this new world order. Okay, but what are we battling? We're battling a massive organization that is united with a common agenda. They have a goal, a well-defined goal. They have an incredibly detailed plan that entails hunt. You know, if you go to the UN and you start downloading some of their documents, you'll find that they have plans that they make plans 100 years in advance.
Right.
These people aren't even going to be here in 100 years, and they're making plans 100 years in advance. This is what we fight against, and yet we don't seem to kind of follow along the same trail. And the problem is that they've been successful because maybe they have a plan. They're united in that plan towards that goal. and they work that plan.
I heard that referred to one time in a leadership training seminar I attended as cathedral thinking. 100 years before they built Notre Dame and some of the other big chapels in Europe, they went out and planted the oak trees that would become the timbers and the beams for that chapel. They had a plan. Way, way, way before. I mean, that the generation that planted the trees never saw the first stone laid, you know, of the building. But they had a plan. They had organization. They had a good enough plan so that they could pass it down from generation to generation and see it to its completion. And we didn't, you know, coming, speaking about us and all our problems, we didn't get to where we're at in a day. And we certainly aren't going to fix it in a day. I would go as far as to say, if we can fix it peacefully at all, we're not going to fix it in a decade. And we're never going to fix it without a plan.
Oh, I think so, too. You know, and the problem is that maybe that's the problem. You know, we don't know how to make plans anymore. We don't know what a plan is. I know that we've talked about a plan with Joe Martino on the show, and this guy, well, his whole job was plans. Devising plans. And he laid it out real simply. He goes, you got to have a clear, defined goal. Restore the Constitution. Well, that's not clear and defined.
Right.
So we need to start defining what we mean by restore the Constitution. He said, from there, you need to see where you're at and where you want to be and then start working backwards. This is where I'm at. That's where I want to be. Now, how do I get there? And you start walking backwards until your plan leads you to where you're at now. And then he said, you have to remember that all plans go to crap the moment that you engage your enemy. So
right.
They have to be malleable, you know, and that means that the plan has to be able to be modified on a local level.
Modular, at least, and with a lot of backup plans and contingencies.
For sure. Any organization or business that is whatever their purpose is, profit or gain or sales, they start out with a mission statement and a goal. And you can go to any board meeting, and if things are starting to get off track, they can look at their mission statement and their goal. And you can say, is this helping our mission statement, or are we spinning our wheels and wasting our time? Is this going to get us towards our goal, or are we spinning our wheels and wasting our time? And that's something that even before we have a plan, we should have. And if we don't have that, because that's the unifying, you know, that's the thing that holds us together. We can argue about this, that, and the other thing in our disagreements, and that keeps us weak. But what we fail to do is talk about what we have in common. And perhaps that's because we don't have a mission statement and a goal. I mean, sure, like you said, we have a goal. We're sort of Constitution. Fine. That's not a goal per se. I mean, I'm not a sports fan, but somebody told me one time, you know, the goal in football is to make a first down. Wait, I thought the goal in football was to make points. No. If you keep making first downs, you will make the points. But the goal is make a first down. And that changed my way of thinking from the big picture to taking one step at a time. Yeah, that's true. The goal is making a first down. And if you make enough first down, you will achieve your objective in making points. But the goal is to make the first down, to take the small step, to go the short distance continually, which will bring you to the longer distance in the long run, if that makes sense.
Well, I think it does. You know, and that's where we seem to, you know,
like that.
You nailed it there. You know, and I think that's where we're losing it now. This is kind of reminiscent of the mid 90s. You remember when after all the militia broke apart?
Oh yeah, I remember well.
Now we've kind of actually exceeded that point. You know, we are at a point, man, where we are growing in leaps and bounds. You know, and it kind of reminds me of the great expansion of Rome, but when it went from the city-state to the empire, it didn't know how to handle that expansion. It wasn't prepared for it. It didn't have the infrastructure for it. It didn't have anything. It didn't have a plan for it. One day it's a city state. The next thing you know, it's got more wealth than anybody can shake a stick at, and it doesn't know what to do. And that's kind of where we're at. You know, we're growing in leaps and bounds on a daily basis, yet we're very much in the infant stage. We haven't even learned to crawl yet. We're barely crawling. We're barely learning to crawl yet. And I think that needs to change real fast. We need to, you know, I think we need to pull up our panties here, put the egos aside, and start maybe listening to people.
Absolutely.
And if the people that we're listening to only preach about the problems and aren't talking any solutions, they talk about what restoration is and what it means and how we're going to get there, besides a protest, maybe we need to stop listening to them and move on to somebody who's saying some better ideas. Somebody who's talking about a way to actually restore and what it might look like when we do restore. You know, but we keep listening to the salesmen out there who want to sell us stuff during every show. You know, I'm not downing anybody. You know, get your info where you can.
Right.
But you know, let's really start looking at what it is we're trying to do. Are we trying to, you know, have a blow by blow broadcast of the New World Order taking power, or are we trying to combat it? Because I see everybody giving me a daily blow by blow. I get 100 emails a day telling me everything that the government is doing. Like I don't already know.
Right.
But I don't see, but I only have a few people that send me emails about, I only have a few emails from some people asking me, how do we fix it? And I have even fewer emails from people telling me, or giving ideas on how to fix it.
I worked for a guy one time that told me, don't come to me with a problem unless you have a solution to it. If you come to me with a problem, you don't have a solution, I'm not going to listen. So that was kind of an interesting, at first I kind of thought, well, that's kind of arrogant. I have a complaint. But then as I grew in leadership, I began to understand what he meant. Look, I'm a busy man. I don't have time to solve all your problems. I have my own problems. I have the organization's problems. So if you have a problem, fine, come to me, prepare a solution with it, and we'll discuss it. And, we're in a complaining stage now, which is all well and good and fine. I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff going on, but we need to move beyond that stage. We need to, so to speak, quit our whining and buck up and pull our pants on and get ready for a plan, a march, a goal that will fix our problem, because all of the complaining will accomplish nothing.
I agree. I mean, so you know what? I think part of the thing is, you know, we keep wanting to be, cheerleaders maybe is a, maybe that's a harsh word. And I see so many cheerleaders, though. I see all the people, you know, chanting slogans, you know, waving the pom-poms and the placards and the protest picket signs or whatever they are. You know, I see a lot of people engaging in stuff, you know, and these things that really aren't getting us anywhere, and the same things we've been doing for 100 years that haven't worked.
Right.
Maybe it's time for us to take a look at something new.
Well, I would agree. I mean, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. And, boy, if we ain't been caught in that rut, I don't know what rut we're caught in, you know. We'll wait till the next election. We'll see if that will fix things. And the powers that be are not stupid. I mean, they throw the people a bone from time to time, just enough to you know, keep them from falling at the mouth too much.
You know, it's been said, I've heard many people say it, you know, people like Rothbard, Mises, many others before that. They say that, you know, basically, to paraphrase the idea, is that democracy was one of the greatest inventions ever created. It kept the masses from revolting every 5 years.
Right.
Because they figured that we would just wait to the next election, and we'll fix it then. And then that comes, and we vote, and nothing changes, and it's all the same, and the left and the, you know, and our left party and our right party, they always seem to keep, you know, engaging in the same agenda, and yet we keep fighting about which one is right, because, well, the left is on our side. No, the right's on our side. And yet they keep working together to promote that same, well, you know, authoritarian control over us. And they keep invading our homes and our heads and telling us what we can and can't say and what we can and can't think. What is politically correct? And even now, some things are even enough to get you thrown in jail for. Just saying some things, having certain discussions, can get you thrown in jail.
Yeah, isn't that a travesty? Just the thought of it, you know? Certain phrases, certain words, certain, you can't, you know. But then again, I suppose that has something to do with, look, rights come with obligations. The right to free speech doesn't mean that you can slander somebody. That's not free speech. And maybe that goes back to the part where we were talking earlier, if you don't know your rights, you don't have any. Because, yeah, you have the right to free speech, but you don't have necessarily the right to say, you know, fire in a movie theater, cause panic. You don't have the right to slander people. You don't have the right to bring false charges against somebody or fill out a false police report for vindictive reasons. So rights come with obligations and limitations, of course. But I guess the point of all that is rights only work in a moral society. If you lose your moral compass, you lose your rights, because more and more laws are made to try to legislate morality, and you can't legislate morality. You either have a base of morality in a society, or you don't have a base of morality in a society, and you have chaos. And no amount of law is going to make people behave. That's something that comes from the heart, something that comes from an upbringing, something that comes from, you know, the foundation of where you're from.
You know, and that's, you know, you bring up a good point there. Right and wrong, that is such a subjective word. You know, you go from one country, one town to another town, and there's different ideas of what's right and wrong.
Well,
you know, so how do you determine what's right and wrong? I mean, and when you start getting into the very ideas that we speak, you know, that's going too far. You can't tell me what's right and wrong. You do not have the power to legislate or dictate morality.
Right.
You have the right to tell me that I cannot take somebody's life because I don't like the color of shirt they're wearing. You have that. That's one of those social contracts that we sign and we agree to in order to be part of society. We don't murder.
Right.
But now there's a big difference between killing and murdering.
Correct.
Self-defense is always self-defense. I don't care who you are, and it's never murder if it's in self-defense. You know, but we lose these ideas. You know, now people are saying, you know, any death that you cause is wrong. So if that guy comes in your house and you shoot him, and he's armed with a machete, and you've got your wife and your kids in the bedroom with you, and he comes kicking in the door, machete in hand, and you shoot him, you are wrong. That's the police's job. Only they have that ability to determine if force is needed. Because we're not allowed to use force. We're not allowed force at all.
Right. Well, and that's something that that's a big can of worms. It's something that's been taken from us, that we've allowed to be taken from us. That's something that we've been coercively thrust into, intimidated into believing, so to speak. I can tell you right now, I don't care who it is, anybody that kicks my door down is going to be met with whatever force I deem necessary to protect myself and whoever else is on the premises. And we'll sort everything out. What's that old saying? I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6.
Judged by 12 than carried by 6. Very true.
I was about to say that. Nice. Yeah, that's exactly my philosophy, too. You know, if it comes, you know, down to kill or be killed, I'm not going to hesitate. And, you know, if somebody's trying to hurt my family, it's not going to end well for them. And, you know, I don't care what ramifications I end up having to face over that. I'd rather have my family alive and safe and, you know, having to deal with a bunch of legal BS, you know, than to be dead along with my family. It's ridiculous. You know, we do need to assert our right to defend ourselves. That's just, you know, natural given. You know, it's not given to us by the government. We have that. We're born with that. You know, we have the right to defend ourselves and our lives. And the fact they're trying to, you know, make it where you know, oh, you're now obligated to die, you know, by the hands of whatever thug or criminal comes along. It's a bunch of bullshit, and I'm not going to play that game, and I hope nobody else does either, because that's just wrong. And they also take it to the fact where, you know, you end up hurting somebody that tries to hurt you, and then they come back and sue you. You know, that's ridiculous on its face. It offends my sensibilities.
Well, you know, I want to bring up that point because we had talked about that, and, you know, we had somebody in the chat room. You know him well, Gary. One angry brother came in the chat room. I had him on the show a little while back, too, before I took my sabbatical. You can find him in the Blog Talk archives on that show. But he brought up a point. You know, and I've been saying this, and many of us are saying this. You know, they are not going to give up power willingly. You know, they are not going to just hand it over and say, oh, you guys found us out. Yeah, you found that little law. You guys are understanding the Constitution now. Gee, you found us out. Okay, we'll stop. You can have it all back now. It's not going to happen.
Absolutely right.
So, you know, my contention is that as long as we're stuck in the realm that we think that they're just going to get it back freely and willingly, we're never going to move beyond the point of pickets and protests and move to the point where we start making plans. But like you said, there are people out there that have, you know, been thinking about this and working on this. In fact, you know, there's a plan out there. It's a hypothetical plan. You know, it's based upon a hypothetical situation. You know, where tyranny has arisen anywhere, you pick the country, anywhere, call, you know, Mogadishu if you want. It doesn't matter. But tyranny has risen. People are disappearing in the night. Death squads abound. Gestapo knock on doors. And, you know, and basically the plan was devised from what the Founding Fathers did before the Revolution, during the Revolution, and just after the Revolution. How they were able to free a country, the actions they took, all the actions they took. And it basically got turned into a modern, and we put it to a modern theater. Now, Gary drafted this thing up, and he's been working on this for about 20 years. You know, he felt that he was, you know, kind of like the Thomas Paine. You know, he wanted to start a revolution, but he said long ago. And then we started talking, and he realized, you know, we have not engaged in all peaceful venues yet, or as peaceful as they'll let them be.
Right, I agree.
So we decided to basically look at what the Founding Fathers did as their last-ditch efforts, and then put together something that we could say, you know, here's a template, an idea of what a goal could be, not just what the problems are, but how to fix them step by step. Money, currency, you know, manufacturing, our freedom, states' rights, all that stuff. It's all in there. And then Gary put together this plan as a worst-case scenario. You know, this is Plan B through Z. If Plan A, you know, that our template for the Olive Branch petition didn't work, because you got to have a plan B.
Right.
You know, they had the Olive Branch petition and it didn't work. They came for their guns. They came for everything. So what do we do at that point? You know, we kind of put together a plan and tried to show how all these things that we talk about, the infrastructure that we talk about, the committees of safety, the militia. You know, and Gary started doing this because he was asked a question, you know, could a revolution take place in a modern technologically advanced society? And Gary, you know, thought, no, it could not happen. And then he really started looking at it, and he thought, well, maybe it could. So, you know, he put something together there. And, you know, like you said, you know, this is a template. This is an idea of what, you know, a country that was facing tyranny, engaged in tyranny, what a plan might look like. Because I don't think people really understand what is all entailed in a plan. Maybe if you were in the military or you've got a very strong business background, you understand the concept of a plan and all the detail involved. But I really don't think that most people have.
Right.
You know, people have begun reading it and stuff because, you know, we're starting to get some comments and ideas and stuff. But, you know, the plan, I think that's what people aren't realizing. You know, they will not give it up freely. Which means what? What does that mean exactly then?
It means it has to be taken.
Well, but what happened? What will they do though? I think that's part that the people aren't realizing, you know, is what the government is willing to do, what the lengths they're willing to go to are. And they, you know, and you hear them on all the scary radio shows like Alex Jones and all them. You hear all the things that the government's willing to do to you. But nobody's ever really come out and started talking about what we'll do to stop them from doing that to us. And everybody keeps saying, well, you know, when is it going to happen? You know, we need to wait for the right time. I said the right time was 20 years ago. We should have been planning. But we didn't do it then, so maybe the right time is today. The next best time is today. I think we need to start asking ourselves these hard questions and start taking a look at even harder solutions.
I totally agree, and we have to be willing to look at all the contingencies and what might happen if this step fails. If this step fails, what do we do then? If that fails, what do we do then? All the way to the very end, because if we don't do diligence in planning this out and being prepared for whatever eventuality comes to bear, we're going to be scrambling around, because there's a very good chance that a lot of these measures will fail and we'll have to keep escalating it. We're in a situation where if we want to win this, we can't ever back down. We have to keep plugging at this and keep going at it, you know, at every possible angle and using every means possible to achieve the goal. No matter what it takes, we prefer a peaceful solution, but the powers that be have to understand that we're not going to back down. If it takes us, you know, knocking heads and breaking China, so be it. You know, we are not going to back down. We're not going to have this bullshit anymore. And, you know, just by a good show of resolve, you know, they might start to get the picture. But that doesn't mean that it's not going to be necessary to execute those plans. I hope not, but we have to be prepared, because that's reality.
Well, resolve without a plan is like a lion without any teeth. What are you going to do?
Exactly.
You know, I think part of it, though, also, is that we're afraid to bare our teeth. We've forgotten how to growl.
I think you're right.
We become scared of those two organizations that we keep talking about, the police and the military. We've become scared of them. That's why we are afraid to bare our teeth, because if you bare your teeth, well, they might send in their goons to come smack your nose so you stop growling and barking.
Well, they do. They'll kick your door in the middle of the night, and they'll pull your teeth, and you'll end up in prison or shot. That's the fear factor. Whether it's lawful or not, or under the color law, or under any of those other kinds of things, is irrelevant. That's what will happen. And it will happen because we're not organized, and we're not solidified, and we don't have solidarity amongst us, and we don't have a plan. If we had a structure, a plan, a call tree, that still might happen to somebody like me. I'm the closest person I live to is a couple hours away, you know, that's in the movement that I know of. Now, I know some people around the area who are more or less survivalists, but they're not, you know, they're more or less of the mindset of the Alamo. They're going to protect their property to the end and in the worst case scenario. But, you know, so they come to kick my door in, I'm on my own. But if we had a plan and we were solidified and we were unified, they would make it a lot harder for them to do that stuff. Yes, they might get away with it once or twice, and we might have some murders, but that would perhaps be the spark that would light the fire that set things right.
Yep, I agree with that. Absolutely. We do have to have a good solid plan, you know, behind us. And if we don't, we're just going to be, flailing around. If we're waiting for them to come kick our doors in, we're doing something wrong. We need to be a little bit more proactive about the whole thing.
Well, you know, I mean, here's some ideas, okay? First off, you know, we talk about bugging out to these, you know, to these off-grid places, you know, that acre of land you got hidden out in the woods somewhere that is on the government record books and you get taxed on.
Right.
In other words, they know where you are. We talk about bugging out to there, though, but okay, what happens if we bug out? We give up everything that we have that we need to survive. So we bug out individually, or maybe in a small group. Hell, maybe even a group of 50, 60, 70, maybe even 100 people. For those that are really, really got really got their shit together. And what are you going to do out there then? You're going to sit and wait.
If they've got their shit together that good, they shouldn't be bugging out in the first place.
I agree. I don't know how many people. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people who camped out and in the movement, and probably some military people who have been in some extreme survival situations. I went for 18 months in the early 90s and lived out west, and I lived kind of in a ragtag way in mainly Arizona and Montana. And I had, when I left, I had had enough of society, and I decided I'm just going to go live in the mountains. I'm going to go, and I'm done with people. I'm done with society. I was disgusted with the way the nation had become. I was disgusted with people. And, you know, my friend said, "You're just lazy. You want to go out there?" I said, "It's going to be the hardest thing I ever did in my life." And I did go and live in the high mountain deserts of Arizona and out in the mountains of western Montana. I actually stayed in outside of Glacier Park, a little town off US-2 called Hungry Horse, and south of there is the Bob Marshall Wilderness area. And I lived in the woods, and I was fortunate enough to have, like, dried beans and rice and things like that. And I spent a summer out there and lived in a tent. And I got to tell you, that's highly overrated. It's going to be the hardest thing you ever did in your life. Every day, you have to scrounge for food, for firewood. You have to be preparing for winter. If you're in the northern regions of the United States, winters are brutal up there. You probably would not survive it on your own. You know, and then you look at, like, now I'm in Pennsylvania. The game in Pennsylvania is all but gone. They have hunted it to extinction. There's not much rabbits, there's not much squirrels, there's not much small game. 10 years ago when I moved here, all the guys I worked with got deer. The last couple of years, hardly anybody's gotten a deer. There's very few deer in the woods. There's nothing out there to survive on. So when your food, when your supplies, when your clothing wears out, if you go into the wilderness, what are you going to do? Do you know how to tan hides? I mean, do you know how to kill game? Do you know how to skin game? Do you know how to preserve your meat? There's going to be no refrigeration. I mean, bugging out is a huge, huge undertaking, which, you know, we say we want to do it. Okay, I'm going to throw my backpack full of MREs in the car. I'm hitting the mountains. Okay, what happens when they run out? Can you tan hides? Can you make clothing out of what nature's available? And even above that, can you find what's out there? Can you hunt? Are you capable of catching fish with a spear or with your hands or when you have no other devices? I mean, how inventive are you? Because most of the people that think they're going to go bug out are probably going to die. And I'm being brutally honest about that because I've tried it and it damn near killed me.
You know what?
Oh yeah, no, it's not easy. And you know, you also pointed out that, you know, the game's becoming limited. Well, imagine when you have a whole bunch of people out there trying to survive in the crisis situation, all competing for the same limited amount of game. Yeah, that's going to work real well.
Right. And my skills are pretty well honed, although I'm getting older now. I'm not as young as I once was, and I can't carry a 100-pound pack all day long. But it's still, if there's nothing there to be had, and if I'm competing with a myriad of people, no, it's not going to work. It's just simply not going to work. You know, you're going to get real tired of eating pine nuts and tree bark. If you even find those. And I'm not trying to dissuade people from that. I think
bugging out is plan Z when there is no way whatsoever to hold where you're at or anywhere even remotely resembling civilization. And it's a lost cause. You bug out then and go somewhere where you can still fight. Maybe the next closest town.
Right. Well, I'm outside of a city not too far away, and it would probably be pretty chaotic here. So I do have plans to go a little further north into the mountains, but not to live off of the wilderness per se. I've got a plan, or, you know, let's say hunt camp living. But because I alone can't protect what I have from hordes. You know, you need to have, that's another thing too, that I don't know that people consider or not. if it does fail, if we go into a crisis situation, if the economy collapses, if people start feeding on each other, I mean, the cities will empty out. In 24 hours, the cities will be out of food. And if there's not an infrastructure to be bringing food continually into the cities, within 24 hours, within 2 or 3 days, people are going to be really, really, really hungry. Where are they going to go? Well, you know, they're going to start migrating out from the cities. I'm not too far. So this is probably not a place I'm going to want to be. So even if you get to the place that you're going to hole up and protect your stuff, you can't do it by yourself. You can't watch 24 hours. You can't watch a 360-degree perimeter. Here's an idea. You got to have a plan.
Oh yeah, exactly. That's what we're doing. We've got a good plan. We've been working on it for years, actually. You know, setting up a remote infrastructure that's completely self-sufficient. Where, you know, if we got to exist out there for years, you know, so be it. We'll be all right. And we're trying to do it as stealthily as possible. Where, you know, if we do have people running up on the place, it's not going to look like we have anything. It's like, okay, well, you know, keep going. You know, there's nothing here. Because you made a very valid point. When you've got a lot of hordes out there, you're going to be a lot of desperate people just looking for anything. And if you're conveniently located for them, yeah, you're going to have some visitors, and you're going to have to find a way to deal with that. And you have a valid point with the, you know, you can't do it alone. You know, strength in numbers. You know, you've got to have a group of people that are working together, not for just defense, but, you know, for, you know, other operational aspects. Everybody brings their own unique skill sets, you know, to the table. And if you have a diverse group of people with varying skill sets, you can cover all the bases, and, you know, you can actually survive quite well if you planned it out in advance. You know, a impromptu bug out where you're just having to think on your feet, yeah, you got your work cut out for you on that one. That's probably not going to end well, just like you were saying.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Think about it also. It took entire tribes to be able to live like that.
Right.
It took entire tribes who grew up learning how to do it. None of us grew up learning how to do that.
And game was plentiful in those days.
Yeah, you had herds of millions of buffalo there. You know, and I've been all over the U.S. There's not much game out there.
Right.
So I don't know. We talk about, you know, plans and things like that. You know, I want to talk about something, one aspect of the plan that we're presenting, and it might, you know, I don't know. You know, maybe some people have better ideas. I haven't seen any yet, though, and nobody's talking about them. So, you know, but we talk about, you know, basically picture the map of the U.S. as black, the black representing tyranny. And then here and there, little dots of little white dots start appearing all over that map. One at first, and then a second, then a third, and a fourth. Small little areas, communities, where people have engaged in resistance. And I use the U.S. here in that hypothetical sense because that's the map that everybody's familiar with. I just want to clarify that this is hypothetical only, academic purposes.
Uh-huh.
I got to clarify this stuff if anybody's listening out there who really, you know, who doesn't like what we're saying. But, you know, little small areas are taking where people have developed a civil authority, a methods of defense, which is, you know, militia, you know, so, you know, of militia of some sort that. And they keep, and this group of people keep these small areas running, electricity running, power running, utilities, water, food. They keep it all going. You know, that's how we did it back in the revolution at first. You know, small areas of resistance, and then we would spread out from there.
Right.
You know, and then from there, you know, it just expands and grows. It starts in that local town, and it grows from there, and it keeps growing outwards. And eventually, you know, you have a state. I'm only using the United States for academic purposes due to the familiarity with everybody in the U.S. map. There's my disclaimer. So, eventually you got a state now. And then another state pops up. And another state. And then eventually, you know, you have something again like a Continental Congress. We're all, you know, where the states are starting to form and represent, you know, starting to send delegates up while their militias are uniting and fighting. And then from there, we can actually change and start restoring the country. I mean, it's going to take something like that. You know, I don't see, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't know. You give me your viewpoints, you know, please. You know, be honest and upfront. Anybody else in the chat room? You know, if these ideas, if you think these ideas won't work for some reason, you know, shoot them out there to us. Let us know. Maybe your ideas are right. Who knows? But that's the point of this show and these conversations, to get different ideas and to finally maybe find something that will work. Because right now we really don't have much. We got the RAP plan. We got the Restored America plan, where you can buy your citizenship and, you know, the non-elected president, I guess. I don't know. We can do things like that, none of which are constitutional, by the way. That's called a coup instead of a restoration.
Well, I like the way Abraham Lincoln put it best. The Constitution does not give the American people the power to overthrow the government, but rather to overthrow those who pervert the Constitution. That's what we need to focus on once we have our plan. And I think, like you said, we restore constitutionality. It's a ground up, a grassroots system. We restore it in our local communities first. We create a base of constitutionality and we grow it from there. You know, it's like the old, you can't sit down and eat an elephant all one gulp. You gotta eat it one bite at a time. It seems like an insurmountable task when you look at it, but one bite at a time, it's possible. That first down goal is possible. The small step. Do the small things instead of, you know, if we focus on the big picture, we'll run around willy-nilly till our heads fall off, not getting anything accomplished. We have to, at some point in time, we have to drive a stake in the ground and decide, okay, this is my turf, this is my area, we're going to start here, we're going to do what needs to be done, and we're going to persevere.
I agree. Now, you know, think about that. You know, in these small pockets, you know, you have the doctor's still running, the hospital's still up and going, because you're going to need this. What are you going to do with them? I mean, yeah, you know, a combat medic is great to have around, man, but I'll tell you what, I'd rather have a doctor who knows a little bit more than the combat medic. You know what I mean? Well, combat medics are golden, you know, for what they do, but they're not doctors. They don't have the hospital equipment and the supplies that are going to be needed.
If you inconvenience the people, that's your only base of support. And if you lose their support, you're doomed. You know, so you don't want to alienate them. You don't want to lose them. You want to grow and nurture them. And the only way you're going to do that is to have a plan in place that disrupts the community while all this is going on as little as possible. Well, of course, it doesn't matter what you do. Some people are going to be upset. But you're right. You have to keep basic staples going. You got to have health care. You got to have food. You got to have transportation. Things got to move. You got to have fuel. And people got to have to be able to keep their jobs. You know, they can't be like in Stalinist or Leninist Russia. You can't be cowering in your apartment waiting for the footsteps up the stairway, that knock on the door that's going to take you away. Things have to go on. Life has to go on. People got to feed their families. So, without a plan, we can't make any of that happen.
You know, now, if we look back, you know, some of those plans, you know, and let's be honest, we're going to have to get into that, you know, taboo area here, okay? You know, if we look back at various revolutions throughout history, let's look at the one that everybody here is most familiar with, our revolution. You know, it didn't just start one day with everybody saying, okay, we're going to war now. You know, there were ambushes. There were tar and featherings that were going on, and some people were dying from them.
Right.
There was governors being arrested and imprisoned by the militia upon the orders of the committees of safety.
They were thrown out in the street and their houses burned in Boston.
They were burning houses down. They were confiscating government property and selling it off to raise money.
Right.
These are all the things that were happening. You know, there was the Boston Tea Party, the destruction of, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars, you know, today's, you know, tens of millions of dollars worth of tea in today's dollars. That's not a small little operation there. You know, it wasn't like, you know, throwing a stink bomb, in the post office or something. I don't know. I'm just coming up, talking off here. You know, there was actions that were going on long before they said we're at war. We're in a revolution against, you know, we're in revolution to get to gain freedom, to gain basic human rights. So, you know, it started long before then with, you know, an organized body saying, okay, you know, this is what it's going to be. There was people operating outside of the militia and operating outside of the committees of safety.
They redressed King George for grievances, and they were turned down numerous times. You know, they did try to petition the parliament and the king for redress of grievances long before they started any trouble, but they were ignored. So they escalated it to the next level. Harassment and other things. And when enough finally became enough, you know, in their frustration, they started in small ways rebelling against the powers that be. You know, in Boston, they threw the governor out on the street, threw his furniture out, started a big fire. You know, they ransacked things. Like you said, a shipload of tea went into the harbor. There were guerrilla warfare skirmishes, harassment. But it wasn't until that they had enacted a plan, you know, from years before, that it was part of the plan. The plan was being ignored by the powers that be, and that led them to the next step in the plan, A, B, C, D.
Right.
Was, you know, so they were following the plan. If you look at, let's just for interest to conversation sake, let's look at the flip side of that coin. Let's look at revolution without a plan. France would be a good example in the 1790s. It was chaotic. Blood flowed in the streets. Robespierre tried to form committees of safety, and they did have sort of a plan, but they didn't stick to it, and B, Robespierre and certain other people became really power hungry and full of themselves, and it was chaotic. Many, many innocent people died. That was, you know, the monarchy. Yeah, they deposed the monarchy, but it was just blood in the streets. It was crazy. So that's almost direct contrast to what happened in America. Sure, there was some chaos in America, but it was a controlled chaos, and it was a planned chaos, and it led to minimal casualties for the public and maximum casualties militarily, I guess to put it in retrospect.
Well, you know,
everything
you said there was accurate. You know, I think that, it's getting to the point where you see people out there getting to the point where they're starting to act out, and that, you know, individuals throughout the country. And I think that's, you know, it's reminiscent to those revolutionary days. You know, there was individuals acting out. I mean, you know, one was Timothy McVeigh.
Right.
You know, and I don't want to get into the government was involved, the government wasn't involved. I don't think the government was involved in that. I think he was pissed off, and I think he was acting out.
Was playing in the IRS building in Texas there last year.
The playing in the IRS building, I don't know, man. That guy was kind of, you know, that guy seemed more of a, I think he was actually a communist, man. He was quoting from Marx's, you know, it seemed like he was actually supporting Marxism and socialism and stuff. I don't know. But yeah, okay, we could take that one too, you know, but there's people that are beginning to act out. Whatever their motivation is, they're starting to act out, just like they were doing back in the founders' days. You know, and the committees of safety used that to go and say, hey, look, you can either start dealing with us or you can deal with them.
Yeah.
And this is going to start happening more and more unless you start dealing with us.
Right.
You know, and Joe Martino had talked about that. You need that covert operation as well as the overt operation. And the two have to be separated. You know, you can't have the voice for freedom and, you know, the voice for freedom and the voice against tyranny out there, you know, for, like in Ireland. You know, working hand in hand with the IRA, that wouldn't work. You know, that's not going to gain the public support. You know, I think that book, Resistance to Tyranny by Joe Martino, is mandatory. I mean, it should be mandated reading for every militia member. I think every committee of safety should have multiple copies. I think they should be handed around and passed out. I just lost mine. And luckily, Smiter in Washington, he's bought several. He's been handing them out. He's sending me up another one, man. You know, I've read that book probably 12, 13, 14 times, and I read it twice over the last 3 days. 3 days ago, I read it twice. So, I mean, you know, I think we really got to start looking into the infrastructure and what's really going to be needed, and really start thinking, like Joe said, that book is a primer. You know, it's not a how-to, it's a primer for resistance to tyranny, if you think tyranny might arise in the future. You know, and he said, the time to resist tyranny is not when tyranny's already at hand. Then it's almost impossible. I mean, look at Cambodia. You can't resist tyranny when all of your weapons and your infrastructure to defend tyranny is taken from you. You're not going to defend tyranny with sharp words and slogans. You're not going to resist it against it like that. So the time to start thinking about it is when they start coming after your guns primarily. They did that in 68. So, where are we at?
Well, yeah, Dave, assault is on many grounds. I mean, sure, there's been very small assaults against, like, the Second Amendment rights in various forms of banning this and banning that or restricting this or restricting that. But they started really assaulting our First Amendment rights to free speech. Even I would go as far as to say free religion, because certain religions are really slammed in America today and looked down upon. Freedom of the press. Hey, if you got to buy a license to be able to broadcast or print what you print and distribute it, that's not freedom of the press, you know. So the person that holds that license, or the person that gives that licensing power, really holds in their hand the power to shut down the freedom of the press, which would be the government.
Hey, give me 1 second. I've got to switch phones real quick. I got to get you off speaker and then switch phones over. Give me 1 second, okay?
Sure.
Okay, we got you back again. We're back. Sorry about having to interrupt you there. My phone started beeping. I didn't want it to drop the call, so.
It's all right. Not a problem.
Well, you know, again, like everything else, you know, Delta Yankee in the room, he had mentioned that, well, here, let me read it to you exactly. Small groups of people have always been the ones that change history. Those are the folks that matter. You know, and I think that brings to that point, you know, we don't need everyone to begin enacting change. We just need a few brave souls to begin that change.
I would agree. It's always been the brave few that have instituted great happenings in history. Very rarely has it been the club-wielding massive crowd that changed things. It always began with a few.
Yeah, that's so very true. You know, we've seen that, you know, and through history multiple times, and it's starting to happen here again. You know, those of us who are here and willing to stand up and discuss plans and try to do everything that we can, you know, for our fellow countrymen to restore freedom to the nation, you know, we'll be the ones that are the bleeding edge of this, that, you know, start this. Others may follow in the end, and it may grow, you know, but it will be the small groups, the leaders, you know, the people that were willing to take the first actions, the stand, the ones with the cojones.
Sí, muy mucho cojones.
It's what it's going to take.
Well, it is. It's almost as if and I'm not going to say everybody, but I'm going to say everybody is afraid to take that first step. It's like we sit back like a trap, all sprung and under pressure and ready to be tripped, waiting for that first event or first thing to spring the trap, but that may never happen. As we sit and watch all tense and sprung and ready to go, encroachments are made steadily and daily upon our liberties. Little by little by little by little we lose. And yet we're all there tense and primed and ready to go, but we're waiting for somebody to trip the spring on the trap. And it may never happen. You know, that's their way. That's the Marxist way, a gradual encroachment of liberties until one day, you know, it's gone.
Well, yeah, we're getting there.
Either, you know, and I think we come back to that same point. You know, we can either start looking at this and start creating and building infrastructure just in case. The Founding Fathers did. They started creating infrastructure because, I mean, let's be honest here, okay? I mean, let's be honest. I don't want a revolution without a civil authority. I do not want any kind of a restoration action where just the military's in charge. I do not want that. I've seen that in every other revolution that has happened throughout the ages of time, throughout all the other restorations and the ventures for freedom. And every time the military's in charge and there's no civil authority, it ends up in martial law and the heads keep rolling.
Right. Well, and that's true, and that's the thing like we talked about earlier. So what if we realize all our dreams? What if we marched on Washington? What if we deposed all of the despots and sent them on a ship to some faraway island? What happens then? We have created an absolutely huge vacuum, and nature abhors a vacuum. So something is going to be sucked in there to take, you know, to fill it if we don't have a plan to fill it. And it will probably not be a good thing. That's how. Well, as a matter of fact, you know, we're on the subject. That's one of the things that the Marxists really rely on. They believe in order through chaos. They rise to power through revolution. They don't care who starts the revolution, like poor people just clamoring for rights. But they'll be happy to step in and guide that revolution. And if it's not an organized thing, if it's not a revolution with a plan for fruition, in the end, we win the revolution, there's a huge vacuum, and they step in and take power. So, I mean, it's happened in countries all over the globe. That's how they've risen to power in Central America, in Southeast Asia, and in Africa. You know, they create a revolution, they create a big vacuum, and they, oh, well, we have the solution to this. We'll take charge. We're already. And that is one of my, I'm not going to say fear, but I am apprehensive about something happening in America and the movement being used by Marxists who are pretty sly and wary and have been at this for 100 years or more and being hijacked, which is exactly what's happening in Egypt. Those people have been hijacked. Now that movement that was a grassroots movement from the people who may be stirred by the Marxists has been taken over by the Marxists and Muslim Brotherhood and other agents. They've just used the people to rise to power. And that's the danger here in America of having any sort of a rebellion or revolution without a plan firmly in place, without a civil authority. We will just be opening the door to far worse things than we have now, I believe.
Well, you know, here's something that I've always learned and I've known. You know, let's take chess. I know on the chessboard that the player who plays white, he's the one who gets the opening move. He controls the pace of the board from that point on. He controls that game. Because he initiated the attack.
Right.
I think if we keep waiting and waiting and waiting for them to come after us, you know, like in a Solzhenitsyn-type situation where, you know, there's nothing set up, there's nothing established, we end up in a situation like they were in France, for instance. You know, the French Resistance when Hitler came in. They had nothing. And then they had to figure out how to do this on the fly.
Right.
And how well did that work for them?
Not very well at all. Not very well at all.
What's the difference between proactive and reactive? When you're having to be reactive, you're never at your best. You know, you're having to just make stuff up as you go along. You're not where you're strong. You know, you can't gather your assets. You can't, you know, really get organized in that situation. You know, but when you're putting a plan together and you start taking proactive actions, you know, you've taken the initiative, and you're fighting the battle on your terms rather than their terms. You know that. You know, that's a huge asset. That may make all the difference in the world.
Right. It is an irrefutable law that a reaction can never stop an action. It can only redirect it. So you're better off, you know, to be on the leading edge than on the reactive edge.
You know, I think the problem is that we keep wanting to react to situations. Instead of responding to we react to problems instead of responding to a situation. I don't know if anybody's aware of the difference between them. There's a huge difference. Reaction is an emotional response, or is an emotional action taken by you. It's not thought out. There's no plan. It's an immediate reaction to that problem, to the situation, a response. Is action taken that has been thought out to solve a problem that is, to solve a situation that is causing a problem? Because the problem that you're facing is not the problem; something is causing that problem. That's the true problem. You know, immigration. You know, the border is not the problem in the U.S. You know, corrupt. You know, the Federal Reserve is not the problem in the U.S. Those are symptoms of the problem.
Right.
And, you know, and we can keep putting Band-Aids on these 10,000 cuts, and we're never going to solve the problem. We keep chasing after the symptoms of the problem. We never solve the problem itself. We never go after the problem.
Well, and that's their strategy, I think, to keep us doing that. Or one of their strategies, anyway.
Yeah, exactly right.
You know, now Joe Martino had mentioned, you know, there's... You know, and I agree with this. You know, if we look back, our founding fathers had all three aspects of this. There was people in the committees of safety, the civil authority, who kept the courts open. They were the local government. They were the state government eventually. And, you know, and when the Continental Congress was formed, they became the national, you know, they became the national government. And, you know, you had the militia. Who was a defense of it? They handled, you know, all the fighting, and the, you know, they did what military troops do. And then you had other people in there that were not militia, that were not committees of safety, although they might have belonged to those groups. They were acting independently of those groups. You know, you might call them private security teams. You might call whatever you want to call them. They were doing things outside of the other two groups. You know, they were storming buildings and dragging out judges, you know, kicking them out of town, things like that. And I think that everybody has their roles to play in what's going to happen in the future. And I think we need to have those aspects of the organized, organized, unorganized militia. I think we need to have that structure. We need to have that civil authority because, as we've seen, look at France. Their revolution was just after, you know, our revolution. And they didn't have a civil authority set up. They had a bunch of guys with armies. And after they got rid of all the nobility and the royalty, those guys with the biggest army started looking at each other and everybody else who had a smaller army, and they started chopping heads.
That was chaos because they didn't have a unified plan, a mission statement, a goal, a set of instructions to follow.
What they had was military that didn't subordinate to anybody. They answered only to themselves. They were loyal only to their commanders and leaders.
Right.
They were not loyal to a cause. They were loyal to commanders and leaders. And when those commanders and leaders wanted all the power and did not want to set up government, well, that's what happens. You know, look at Castro. You know, we talked about that one with Joe Martino as well. You know, I guess there was basically two movements going on: Castro in the jungles, and there was a middle class in the city. While Castro came in with the weapons and the guns, the middle class in the city, they didn't have the weapons and guns. Castro took over, and then he killed everybody that was opposed, including those in the city that were fighting for freedom as well. Because Castro had his own ideas of what freedom was going to be. It was going to be freedom for him to rule.
Right.
Again, that military takeover without civil subordination. You know, even our own military, there is no, you know, once you get, I don't know, maybe with lieutenants, maybe, I believe. Correct, anybody correct me if I'm wrong. But officer commissions in the military must be approved by the Congress. You know, colonels are commissioned by Congress. Their ranks are approved by Congress. Nobody's appointed general in the military. It's approved by Congress. You know, even the military doesn't hand out its own officer rankings.
They're not going to approve anybody that doesn't fall lockstep with their doctrine. You know, more or less.
Exactly, but it's still that civil authority that is in charge. You know, they can strip a commission as well.
Right. Right. I see where you're going.
You know, and it keeps you from having those situations where, well, you got somebody who decides, I've got a big-ass fucking army here, and I don't care what you guys say, I'm in charge.
Well, and look what rose out of the military chaos in the French Revolution, Napoleon. He eventually, not right away, but he eventually came to power and took over Europe, in a sense, you know, from that power void and vacuum that was created with the revolution.
You don't need any more warlords, that's for sure.
You know, I really want to restore our government. I don't want to take over, and I don't want a military takeover. I want a restoration.
Right.
You know, some people have said that we're too stupid to engage in a restoration. The people are too dumb. I don't know. You know, it has to be done militarily. Maybe that's true. I don't know. But you know what? I know we haven't tried.
Well,
and I know that if you look throughout history, I cannot find a single military takeover that is that has evolved into freedom for the people. It's never been, the people have always been under tyranny again. It's just a martial tyranny.
You know, if you look at I don't want to pick on any one group or person, but as a whole, even nationwide, if you look at the bickering and the egos and the power struggles that have gone on state and local levels and militias, and I'm aware of quite a number of things that have happened, conflicts of interest, people getting pissed off, and I'm going to go start my own unit, and all these little things that divide us. Can you imagine what would happen if we came to power and all these egos came to play and who's in charge? You know, and it'd be like you said, you know, it's the perfect vacuum for a despot or a dictator or a military, you know, martial law type leader to step into. So we got to iron these things out before we take, you know, any first step. So I guess we're all in agreement on that. Now, how do we get everybody on board?
You know what I think? I'll throw my two cents here. Dave, I'd like you to kick in your two cents, and Gary, I'd like you to kick in your two cents. And please, if I'm wrong, or if you think I'm off base, man, don't agree with me. Tell me I'm off base. This is not an ego show here. You know, here's what I think. I think, much like Delta Yankee said, change has always been done by a very small group of people. Now, as we know, in any group or any organization, there are the thinkers, there are the doers, and then there are the followers. You know, the slogan chanters, the ancillary support group, whatever it is. I think, honestly think that a plan has to be made up, a template of a plan. You know, here's what we're doing. I mean, well laid out, written down in paper, on audio, whatever. It has to have a final goal. This is what we're going to do. This is the problems. This is how we're going to fix them. You know, unlike other ideas that, end the Fed, restore gold and silver. Okay, how? I think we need to outline how. What we're going to do so people can actually see it. I think that a few of us need to start getting together and actively supporting that plan with one voice and taking it to the people that we know locally and online and saying, look, here's what we have. There's nobody in charge. There's nobody. There's no self-elected presidents. There's no lifelong unelected elders. It's local. It's your community. It's your town. We plan everything. We have ideas for plans A through Z that are malleable to your situation. They can be changed as you need them to be. It's not top down. It's specifically bottom up. And why I think we have to promote this with one unified voice. And then we take it to everybody else. And I think that's how we get it on. I mean, I'll be honest. 4 months ago, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, hell, Gary and I have been talking about committees of safety for almost 2 years now. I took a two-month break, man, because I was tired of talking and nobody listening. I come back from that break. When I keep getting all these emails saying, Randy, look, man, we really want you to come back and keep doing what you were doing. So I started looking around and peeking around, and my God, everybody's talking about committees of safety. Or a lot more than there were before. They're talking about a subordination. People are talking about a need for a plan. And what really got me to start really doing my show again was that some of the people were even reading the plan and had read about the committees of safety, not just chanting it because others were. They had actually read. My faith in humanity was somewhat restored. And also, I think that if a group of people got together and formulated a plan, what it would look like, A to Z. A being the peaceful resolve, B through Z being the, oh shit, they won't let it be peaceful. I think maybe that's what might help. Your ideas, guys.
Well, I think you're right. The first step is at least getting people to talk about it, which appears to be beginning to happen. There's actually a couple of states that I know of that people are working on forming committees of safeties and things like that. That would be the first step. I mean, our society, I think, has probably kind of become an instant gratification society. Well, it's not kind of, it is. And I think maybe that's what frustrates a lot of people. We as Americans, we don't like to wait. We want something now. And all of this process takes time. But we have to help people understand that, look, we didn't get here in a day, and we're not going to get out of it in a day. It's going to take time. And that we have to follow a structure in order to get ourselves to the goal. And I think you're right. The more people we get talking about, the more people we get involved in it, the better off we'll be in the long run. I have often myself lost faith in my fellow man and humanity. It is a very frustrating thing. I stood on my soapbox for quite some years back in Michigan and tried to wake people up, and I was labeled a nut, crazy, and even people in my own family, said I was a nut and crazy. But, oddly enough, 15 years later, some of them have come to see some of the things I talked about then, and they're happening. And so I think people are slowly waking up, and I think we got to keep hammering that. I think we can't lose our steam. We can't lose our vision. We can't lose our focus. And we can't let ourselves get discouraged, because even if we reach one person, then we reach somewhere. Yeah, sure, we all want to reach the million or the 100 million. But in reality, the best we can hope to do is influence our sphere of immediate friends and acquaintances, the people we work with, the people we talk with daily. And if we can get that hammered out, and we can get that undertaken and get other people talking about this, then we can probably start to incorporate a plan.
I'm amazed, that people can pop up like this rap plan. And I'll be honest, man, I read that document 10 times in a row that this, Guardians of the Elder, or the Elders of the Republic, or the Guardians of the Republic had put out as being some constitutional document, and how they were going to restore the government constitutionally. I had to read it 10 times in a row because I couldn't believe what the hell I was reading. I thought it was, I couldn't find one thing in there that was constitutional except for the mention of the grand juries. But even then, their ideas of the grand juries are, well, I don't know where the hell they came from, because that's not how it exists. So I don't know what the hell it was, but I was amazed at how many people flocked to them, people that said they understood and knew the Constitution. And I look back at what they did, and it's the same thing that I'm trying to promote here. A few guys got together and all started saying the same shit. And they took
a few
people. And those few people started saying the same stuff. You know, if you look back at starting Father's Day, man, they didn't have anybody helping them. I mean, there was nobody when they started. And it started individually with people just getting pissed off and doing stuff on an individual basis. And then eventually,
we're starting to see progress here. You know, we have gotten some committees set up, and people are talking about it. And I'm, you know, spreading the word wherever I can, and it's been very well received. You know, people are assimilating the idea, looking into it, reading about it, and it's starting to gain a little bit of momentum. And we just have to keep pushing at it, because I think we can be successful in this. We need to keep these kinds of conversations and getting as many people involved as we can. And each one of them can go out into their communities and, spread it farther, start planting seeds. And, like the analogy of the black map, those white dots will start to appear and they'll start to grow and spread. And once there's some momentum behind it, it'll really gather some, pretty massive steam. It'll start slow, but once it gets going, it should actually really start to pick up. And I'm not under any delusions that this is going to be, a quick and easy solution. We've got a long road ahead of us, and we've got to make sure that people getting into this and, realize and understand, what a momentous undertaking this is, that, we've got our work cut out for us, but if we work together, we certainly can overcome this. It's just going to take some time and some unity of purpose.
I think you're right. I think America has become a fruit that's ripe for the picking. We've been programmed and brainwashed through public education and we've been brought to a point in our history where people are starting to wake up and they're angry. We're losing jobs, we're losing money, we're losing freedoms, we're losing rights, we're losing all kinds of things, and it's accelerating exponentially, and people are mad. And if we can tap into that anger, tap into that frustration, and utilize it, channel it to give it an out, channel it into something to glean us a positive result, I think, it's a moment in history. It's one of those rare moments in history that truly somebody could, I hate to use the term take advantage of, but somebody could take advantage of, because...
Oh, yeah.
They
yeah, absolutely. And, the message right now of solution, will really resonate with people, because, people are waking up all over the place. I see that just my, day-to-day, about town, just talking with everybody. That they're a lot more aware now, and everybody's upset and angry and dissatisfied with what's going on. And, they're in a state where they really don't know what to do. So they kind of sit there kind of dumbfounded. Well, what do we do about this? So when a good solution comes along, if it's presented correctly, it will resonate with the people, because we're hungry, for a fix. We've been under this, muck for a long time. And, over the last decade or so, it's really gotten to be quite intolerable. People are losing their asses all over the place. They're out on the street. They're getting screwed over. They're getting SWAT team for no valid reason. The police state is rising. And it's not secret anymore. It's out there in the open. And in part, we have the internet to thank for that, and the YouTube generation, people being able to share their experiences and their videos, and we need to keep that going on. We need to keep educating people about, what's actually happening. But the main thing we need to do now is start focusing on solutions, because I think there's enough people that are awake and angry that all we have to do is reach out to them, and they'll embrace a solution, and they'll run with it.
I think they will. I think you're right.
So, well, you know, Gary and I have worked for a while on the on this U of Tredemy document, trying to set it out there as a template, man, because, you know, I see all these people, you know, and they have all these ideas, man, and they put together these plans, and all their plans are is a list of demands. We want this, we want this, we want this. And some of them are just outlandish as hell, and other ones, you know, it's like, well, how the hell would you expect them to do that? And some of them, I ask them, you know, what the hell gives you the right to think that you can dictate how Congress is going to legislate? That's not how it works.
Right.
You know, it seems like, you know, nobody understands what the hell the Constitution says. So, you know, Gary and I came up with an idea, a template. We asked people for advice and input, but nobody seems to want to give it. So, you know, anybody who's interested, if you're a thinker out there and you would like to move past the rhetoric and the chanting and maybe actually start pushing a plan, a constitutional plan, a plan that worked for the Founding Fathers quite well and covers everything from committees of safety to militia to, you know, lone wolf aspects, whatever it is, for a very hypothetical situation. You know, you never know when China might invade or, you know, Haiti might come up here getting kind of freaky and decide they want to take over the U.S. Well, you never know, man. The Haitians are kind of crazy. You never know. You see all the movies about crazy Haitians, so you never know. You got all kinds of Haitian gangs. They might decide to take over.
If we were to have our vacuum, you know, without a plan behind it, you could have any number of opportunistic factions try to step in and, you know, seize that opportunity. You know, that's why it's so critical to, you know, have a, you know, civil authority, you know, in place, you know, of some sort, you know, that's, you know, alive and functioning during all of this, you know, so when all collapses, we've got the ability to, you know, repopulate the government seats and get everything back up and running in a proper constitutional manner and quickly. We don't need to waste a lot of time on that once it does finally fall down. You know, if we have no plan in place for that, yeah, it could be anything. It really could be just about anything. You know, I would be really worried about what the UN would do. You know, it almost seems at times like, you know, there's factions, you know, in there that are actually trying to cause this, you know, shit to collapse here so they can step in. You know, it really makes me wonder sometimes. I really don't have any proof of that per se, but it is something we have to consider.
Well, I think you're right. I'm of the mindset that America has been being groomed by the Marxists, by the Fabian Socialists for over a century for a takeover. They had a plan in the 1800s. This is the apple of the world's eye. You know, and they have so indoctrinated us, so alienated us, and so brought us into this age of political correctness that we are ripe for the picking. And I say, let's steal that fruit from them. don't let them have the opportunity. Let's have that plan, and let's utilize all this mechanism that they put in place to stomp them out for good.
Yeah, it's not stealing the fruit from them. It's our fruit to begin with. We keep them from stealing it.
Right. Right.
So, any thinkers out there, you guys got ideas, suggestions, plans? You want to read the plan? It's scattered all over the place now. You got to be a member of RAND to really see a bunch of it. Get in touch with me. Email me, randymack@uoftredemy.com. Or email hunt@outpost-of-freedom.com. If you'd like to learn more about committees of safety and our heritage and our birthright, go to www.committee.org. You can start learning all about committees of safety there. More reading than you can shake a stick at. Unfortunately, we're not putting this stuff on YouTube, so you actually have to start using your brains and thinking. Well, you can't even be bothered to read a book. How the hell do you expect to restore a country to its rightful freedom?
That's right, you're here.
Good luck with that one.
Get involved.
So, you know, that's where we're at. I think that's what we need to do. I think we need to come together. I think a few intelligent people that have ideas need to come together, formulate, you know, a plan, a step A to Z. You know, we've got, like Gary said, Gary and I have put together a template, you know, a basis. You know, we need input, though. We're not trying to be leaders here. We're trying to get just put something together that people can start working instead of just running around like headless chickens.
Well, you're right. We get a lot of nothing done.
And you could take the plan and work it in your own area, man, and change it as need be. It's a basic idea. It's a template. You know, there's no top down here. You know, nobody's trying to be that leader. You know, somebody in the chat room had mentioned that we need a national spokesman to take this to the country. Gary had mentioned it's not even time for that yet. What you need is a local spokesman to take it to your people.
Right.
And then when the time comes and we're all, and, you know, there's a movement in, you know, in several areas, then you start finding your next spokesman to go up to the county. The counties form the state committees, and then you send your spokesmen up to the national, which is a continental congress. And you start preaching it out, and then we start presenting it nationally. But, you know, we can't do that until we have something to show, until we have something to do, until we're actually doing it.
How can you reach a nation if you can't reach your local community?
Exactly. So, you know, something I've always promoted on this show is, you know, everybody should be spending, you know, a couple of hours a day working on freedom, not posting blogs, you know, about the latest news story, not talking about how angry you are and we need to come together, but actually working a plan. And if you can't do 2 hours a night, you know, hey, pick a day where you could do, I don't know, you know, 8, 9, 10 hours and spend a day doing it, whatever it takes to do it. You know, but if we can't even get off of our butts and start working a plan and start working for our own freedom, well, who the hell do you think is going to do it for us? There's no white knights in shining armor coming to save us, people.
You're right.
It's only going to happen when people like you and me and everybody out here listening decide it's time to do something and it's time to start working and it's time to get off of our butts and start getting serious. Now, I know a lot of people out there are, man, and again, you know, if this doesn't apply to you, then you won't be offended by it.
Yeah, what was that goofy movie? Just go to your window and yell, I'm sick and tired and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yes, that was Network.
Yeah, I didn't never see that.
Yes.
That part.
It's called Network.
Yeah, Network, 1976. The character's name is Howard Beale, news anchor man that finally snaps and starts telling the truth. You know, and it resonated. You know, I watched that again a while back, and I was like, you know, that could have just as easily been produced and written today. And I second that. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
You know, I think that's what we need to get to, is we need to start drawing in those thinkers. You know, there's a few of us out there, and, you know, I try to pull them in. And I'll be honest, you know, sometimes, man, I can't get a lot of guests on the show because, well, I can't find a lot of people that are thinkers out there. And I don't want to bring on people talking about conspiracy theories and, you know, just ranting and raving and talking about the latest news story and shit. That's not my show. There's 10,000 other shows for that. That's not my show. I talk about solutions here and only solutions, and I try to bring on people that are on that same page. Whether they agree with me on the solution or not, I don't care. But as long as they're talking about solutions and thinking about fixing it and how to fix it, that's good enough for me. So sometimes I can't get a lot of people out here because it's hard to find those people. And then when you do find them, a lot of times their egos are so big you can't get them to work together. So, you know, if anybody is out there listening to this, you are the resistance. You are that leadership we're looking for. You are that think tank we need to put together. Get in touch with us.
That's right.
Get in touch with us, please. If what we're saying you agree with, get in touch with us. Now, if you don't agree with what we're saying, I'm not talking about every single little detail. Forget that idea as well. If you agree with the idea of what we're talking about, then get in touch with us. But not, please, just don't even bother. Don't want to hear it. Like you had said earlier, I don't want to hear from people that aren't coming with solutions or ideas for solutions. I don't care how stupid they might sound. No such thing as a bad idea except the idea that was never presented.
Right. We need to make this not about who's right and who's wrong, but how do we fix the problem? We're way past the point of who's right and who's wrong. That's irrelevant at this point in time. It's all about how do we fix the problem. And I think we got a good foothold on that. We just need input, cooperation, and leadership nationwide needs to lay down their personal agenda. Look, everybody brings something to the table. Everybody brings an agenda to the table. And that's fine. It's well and good because there's strength in our diversity. But when we refuse to lay down our personal agenda, you know, for the greater good of all, then we become a part of the problem and not a part of the solution. So let's not make this about who's right and who's wrong. Let's make it about how do we fix the problem.
I think you're here. I'm more right with you on that. You know, we all kind of want the same thing, and you know, common purpose. You know, that's what it's all about. You know, we don't have to agree on every single detail. And like, you know, Randy has said, you know, numerous times, you know, the plan doesn't have to be, you know, exactly how we lay it out, you know, for your area. You know, change it up, adapt it, you know, whatever works. You know, we're, you know, trying to get to the end goal. And if your situation dictates a few things run differently, run with it. You know, absolutely. You know, there's no problem with that. As long as we keep our eyes on the prize and, you know, keep a cogent plan together of however we're going to get to, you know, our end goal of restoring our nation, restoring our liberties, getting this corruption to go away, it doesn't really so much matter, you know, in the details of each and every step, you know, as long as it's, you know, planned out and people are working together on that plan.
Right, right. Well, I think one of our problems is too many of us focus on the things that divide us instead of focusing on the thing that unites us. And we have to start focusing on what unites us and lay aside those things that divide us. And that's going to be a pretty high calling, and that's going to be a pretty tall measure to overcome. But I'm sure we can do it. It's all part of that laying our personal agenda aside. It doesn't mean your personal agenda is not important. It just means that we need to not focus on the things that we have in difference, and we need to focus on the things that we have in common.
Absolutely. Agree to disagree on those things, and we'll pick those debates up later after we've restored the nation and we've got a forum in which we can, you know, honestly debate these things and, you know, suss out all these differences and, you know, find out what really serves the will of the people best. We don't have to worry about the details right now. We've got a much bigger task at hand right now to ensure our freedoms to be able to, you know, continue to debate and disagree with each other.
You know, and that's the thing, you know, I don't want to, this isn't degrading or berating anybody or anything like that. Please don't take this the wrong way, but, you know, because I'm guilty of it too. I mean, no shit. I'm a human being. I have my faults and my flaws, man. I do. You know, but I think that, I think one of the problems has been is we just can't even talk to each other about solutions or ideas anymore. You know, I was on a chat room the other day, and I had posted a couple of comments, and somebody came back and said that I was, dividing and trying to destroy the belief in Christianity, or I don't even know what the hell it came from. I just put in some. I made a couple comments. You know,
yeah.
I'm sorry if you get butthurt by the things that people say. I'm sorry if your panties get in a bunching about stuff. Maybe this isn't for you then. If you get offended easily, guess what the hell restoration's going to look like? You're really going to be offended then.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
That's another thing. We wear our hearts on our sleeves and we have thin skin. We better rectify that.
So, you know, if you can't even talk about some subjects with people without getting all bent out of shape and your panties in a bunch, you know, maybe you need to go look for a different movement, a different cause, because freedom is not it. Freedom is not your game. I'm just being honest. Save yourself a world of hurt in the future.
That's right. That's right. If you can't take the little things now, how are you going to act when there is no discipline but that which you have taught yourself, you know?
Well, everybody, it is actually 9:15. We're going on 9:15, and we went over last night. I really want to try and keep the shows down to 2 hours. I figure if we can't say what we got to say in 2 hours, we shouldn't be doing this. Listen, Gary Yans. Oh man, I enjoyed this conversation with you.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I really enjoyed having you on. It was a pleasure talking to you. I enjoyed sharing some of these ideas and having discussions with you. thank you for engaging in topics and discussions with me that most people won't engage in. They get butthurt over, and you know, they're just too scared to talk about even. So thank you. I appreciate you stepping forward, man, and putting forth your two cents and some of your ideas as well.
Well, it was my pleasure, I assure you, and it was time well spent in my book. I'm glad that you had me on, and I look forward to an opportunity to do this again sometime.
Yeah, anytime you guys want to come on, I'm serious. You know, guys like you, One Angry Brother, Gary Hunt, man, you know, you guys are the ones that, you know, I know a lot about the things that I know. I don't know everything, so I got my go-to people. You know, Snyder and Dave are my go-to survival, off-grid energy, you know, scientific stuff, man. This, when my eyes start glazing over, when people start talking about scientific things, man, I kind of go to Dave and Snyder for that. Gary is my law and constitution and history guy. You know, I have a lot of go-to people for a lot of things, and you know, I go to you for some of your ideas, and in the chat board, in the chat rooms, and things in the forum board, you know, we shoot back ideas, man, and I learn from you as well. So you know, like I said, this is not my show. This is not my ideas. You know, and people say, I don't know. Sometimes people say that, but you know, it's not my show. It's not my ideas, and I'm not trying to be anybody's. You know, anybody's leader here. I'm just trying to be the guy that maybe gets you to think about something. So, you know, you're one of those thinkers out there, Gary. You're welcome on my show anytime, man. Anytime you want to come on, you let me know. Anytime you got something to say, you let me know. We'll bring you in.
Fire sharp as iron, man.
All right. Well, listen, everybody, Dave, do you have anything you want to say in closing?
I think we pretty well covered it. We need a plan, and we need to start working together and getting busy on it. And, you know, if you can't take the heat, get over yourself, go find something else to do. I agree with that. You know, we don't need everybody to get this started. We need some good people to step up and to overcome the, you know, adversities of, you know, personal ego and start working together. And we've got a really good group of people, you know, coming in and listening to our shows that are, you know, active and doing things. And, you know, we've got a good start on that. And I'm doing everything I can in my arena to, you know, spread the word and get people thinking about the plan and other venues that we haven't reached yet. And that's about all I could do is, you know, reach out, start talking to people, start initiating these conversations as many places as possible. Because if we get these conversations going on more than just right here on You Have Tread on Me, we'll start seeing some progress pretty quick. I have some faith.
All right, everyone. Well, listen. Tomorrow's show, we're gonna have a representative from Arizona Sentinel Citizens coming on from a weekend on the border. I mean, he's coming back from another patrol on the border over the weekend. He goes out there quite often. In fact, he's out there often. So we're gonna have him on tomorrow, bringing on a Tuesday show. I don't do this often, but you know, I really wanted to talk to him. Been trying to get him on for a while. But usually when he's not at work or taking care of stuff, he's out in the desert. So he's going to be on tomorrow, 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard, 8 p.m. Central Standard, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard. Tune in. We're talking about him, about what's going on, what they're doing, what's working, what's not working. Try and get some real info coming out of there and see what's going on. So we'll talk to you then. If anybody wants to get on the mailing list, if you catch the show on the archives, that you want to be on the mailing list for the show updates, it's randymack@youhavetreadonme.com. Email me, put subscribe me in the header. The archives for this show should be up shortly, probably in about 20, 30 minutes. So if you missed any part of it or you didn't catch it, it'll be up there for you to listen to. And as you come on the show, as you come onto the page in the chat room, the player automatically is streaming various shows, so there's always something on the player going from our past shows. And we're putting some of our best shows in there. We're only going to start really putting on the top shows in the playlist, so the shows I think are the most important. So when you come on, you'll be hearing something interesting all the time. So other than that, everybody be safe, be free, start thinking about your future. Start thinking about your children's future and their children's future and what you're going to do to save it. Take care. Everybody be sweet. Everybody be safe. Be free. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good night.